On today's College Football Inquirer, Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, announces a monster deal and then refuses to answer monstrous questions. Plus, Big 12 coaches would like payroll to be considered in college football playoff selection. And also, Yahoo is launching college football fantasy. It's going to be awesome. Eric Froton from Yahoo joins us to discuss who you need to be considering on your big board when you are drafting your college football fantasy team, which will be happening very, very soon. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. I'm home. Ross, you're still on the road. We were both at Big 12 Media Days. And when we recorded the Tuesday show, we said there are going to be a lot of questions. A lot of questions about Texas Tech, about Brennan Sorsby. And then Brett Yormark, the commissioner of Big 12, got up, announced a big ad deal, spent a lot of time on that, and then spent basically zero time answering the big questions because he wouldn't answer the Texas Tech questions at all. At all.
Yep. It was an interesting there was two questions maybe about Tech from the audience during the main presser. And then afterward, you know, usually afterward, Brett Yormark gathers with like media and like a little gaggle.
Yeah.
That didn't happen either.
So interesting choice.
Clearly there was some obvious avoiding of this, right? Because of the two questions, one of them he said he's not going to talk about the issue, and then the other question was a bizarre situation with
Texas Tech media.
Was
member.
That a poem? Was that a poem?
I don't know. It was a sorry, radio my guy who written out his question, and he was basically cataloging the ways that Texas Tech had been treated differently. I think it involved tortillas.
Either way, Brett, did y'all feel
didn't respond?
Did y'all feel the palpable, kind of like knife cuttable embarrassment for that old boy in the room? Because on video, it really comes across.
Yes, I did. Especially let me tell you the second time when Brett Yormark asked him to
when he made him stand up
again,
like a bully. It was amazing.
Which I didn't. The way the question was read the first time, I didn't understand it either. I would have needed to hear it again.
I think it's a limerick. So this did not go the way like that dude was.
Yormark had him repeat it to make sure he heard what he thought he heard, I think. Because he had his response because he wanted to say, you misquoted me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's ready to
fire. The guy was using last year's theme, like greater than 12 or whatever their theme used to be. But that's not. Yeah. Now it's monster. Monster.
The dude, Andy. It didn't go the way he thought it was going to go when he was rehearsing that in his hotel room. Okay. Mm-mm. Because when the moment hits and everybody's staring at you and you've got a complicated question, which you're attempting to be a gotcha, like he was attempting to sort of fight valiantly for the mighty Texas Tech, even though he's independent media, but that's a discussion for another day.
Oh, and can I, well, shout out the members of the Lubbock media contingent.
Were those the guys behind him doing this?
Basically, yes.
Okay,
because
that was not a real reporter.
They stopped
me
as I was heading to the car yesterday and said, "Please don't think that
we don't all live like
one
this.
Or two people represent."
Yeah, we don't all live like this. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Which is like I immediately re-whatevered it on various social platforms. I just say this is why media days are a farce and they should go away and all this kind of stuff. And there's a core of people that are seeking information yourself, right, Ross? The overwhelming majority of the people at these media days now are sort of participants in what is essentially like really cheap shoulder programming for conference networks. That doesn't really apply to the Big 12 here, but that's why they're so big. Like SEC media days, it's free TV, right? And it's meant to be a TV product now. But to go back to Yormark for a second, because as much as I want to make fun of that guy, man, that did not go the way you planned, brother. The Yormark error here. Other than saying stand up, which let me tell you something, Andy. Again, pro wrestling alert. While Ross isn't here real fast. Okay, pro wrestling alert. Telling him to stand up and repeat the question is actually a thing that it's like in heel promo school. Like as a heel, I'm telling you, Andy, like stand up and say that again. Bet you won't say it again to me. And I was like, oh my God, we're in OVW. This is a developmental promo. So, okay, aside from that, I just want to shout that.
Gordon Solly in Tampa was telling, if you want to be a bad guy, this is how you got to do it.
Yes, this is how you get over as a heel. Or if there's the other, the ex-heel babyface turn where he's like, I'm tired of you bullying people around. Stand up and say that. You know, that's like the, when they try to make Lex Luger the next Hulk Hogan. Anyways, I digress because I could go on. Why in the world did your Mark think he could sidestep basically the only thing that people outside of the Big 12 cared about in relation to his conference? You, I say this on the show all the time. When I started as a national writer and I was, you know, you and other colleagues were kind of educating me on the lay of the land, we talked a lot about Mike's Live. And we talked a lot about how Mike's Live and the Southeastern Conference of the late 90s and early aughts would really set the tone for college football every summer. They would come out first in Hoover in Alabama. They would have these the big, long media day. You know, as long as media days are, the SEC always would set the bar for sort of the biggest event. And you see, like, the Big 12, they jump scheduled the SEC and other leagues to be first out of the gate. And I have a point with this. When Mike Slive would get up and give his opening remarks, Andy, it was essentially the State of the Union address for college football. And Big Ten fans get mad about that, but he set the tenor, the tone, and the talking points of everything that we
would.
Yeah,
he looked at it that way.
Yeah,
he realized, based on the calendar, based on how everything worked, that he had a chance to set the agenda for the entire season with that address.
Yeah, and I have always hung on to the. What I think is, I think there's a decreasing relevance in sort of the Big J journalism sense of college football media days. It's a circus. It boosts everybody's Marriott points, whatever. It's not, there's no real value in it, except the one thing that I still valued going back to, like, when Larry Scott would even kind of maybe trip on his manhood at the Pac-12 events. It still offered a platform for these conference commissioners to weigh in on the issues of the day and really set the agenda for what we would discuss outside of who won what game. And what's fascinating to me about your Mark, Andy, is that it felt like he was trying to spearhead a corporate keynote address where
it's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So they made a deal with Monster, the drink, the energy drink, and it's going to be branded all over the Big 12 in football and basketball. They're going to have co-branded Monster Big 12 jersey patches. I believe Sports Business Journal reported it's about $20 million with the possibility of going up. So basically $1.25 million per school. That is the news they wanted out. And they had Monster signage everywhere. They had the 20-something young ladies wearing Monster-branded gear just wandering around. They had samples. Yeah.
Hang on. Did you guys were y'all clued in on this beforehand? Or did you show up and you're like, why is all this Monster signage here?
Yeah. And it had been in the emails. But clearly that was the priority, is get that news out there. And look, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but it got pretty universally panned across the industry. People saying, oh, they didn't get enough money for what they gave up, all that. But that's what they wanted to get out there. He did not want to answer the questions about the most important thing going on in his conference, which is there was a team that was going to play a guy who had been on his own team
from another team.
The entirety of the rest of the league got together.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, conference is suing one of its members over this. Now, I think probably that's why he can't say much, but just say that. Just say there is pending litigation. I can't talk about this. It makes more sense.
From a comms perspective, I was genuinely shocked. I give the SEC a lot of grief. I give the Big Ten a lot of grief for, you know, being the stakeholders and kind of manipulating the narrative to their will. But I also expect that. It's like the Scorpion Parable we talked about on Tuesday. I was just kind of shocked that we didn't even get a little bit of lip service or the legal excuse. Like you said, look, we've covered these events when coaches refused to cross state lines because they were going to be served with subpoenas. Like, we've seen bigger drama than this, Andy. We've seen bigger drama than this.
I have been one of the people standing around the old, you know, back in the day, if you did a conference call, there was that
triform. I was there.
Like something to contact alien species.
Yeah.
Then Fulmer's voice comes out.
Yes.
Wish I could be there today. No, you don't.
Again, very pro wrestling. Okay. Extreme, sort of like a pallbearer in hiding moment. Anyway. All right. It blows my mind that in order to best deliver the corporate talking points that you want to, the Monster Energy, how we are going to be different and innovative, we are going to close the gap with the SEC and the Big Ten, yada, 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 we're better than the ACC. That should have been the conceit of what the Big 12 was presenting. Now, Jim Phillips and the ACC, Andy, got up and I think gave a better speech this time last year, acknowledging the insane reality, maybe it was 2 years ago, the insane reality of what was going on. He had his two prize institutions at the time, Clemson and Florida State, suing him in the conference. Yeah. And still managed to address the elephant in the room, legally cover himself, and then move on. I was shocked that your Mark thought he could bully his way out of addressing Brennan Sores.
Well, and it's interesting because the Big 12, actually, their PR apparatus is pretty good and usually pretty sophisticated.
Yeah.
And I just think they didn't read the room on this one.
It felt like they weren't prepared.
Yeah. Like, of course you're going to get Texas Tech questions. It will be the biggest thing. They are your best team. They are, in fact, the team that you wished for at Big 12 Media Days last
year. Yes. The narrative is unavoidable. Okay, this is manifest destiny. This is a great point. His thesis statement last year was, let's separate from the pack. Let's find someone who can go out there and compete with the Georgias and compete with the Miamis and yada, yada. You got it. Also, I want to reemphasize this. It's not just Texas Tech. It's not just Brennan Sorsby. It's Cincinnati. That's another conference member. Guy, you were not going to beat these charges. Okay?
Well, right. And it was buried in the question, the soliloquy about tortillas, but it was a legitimate question of what happens to Cincinnati. What did Cincinnati know? And Ross reported on Tuesday that they have received a letter from the NCAA saying, hey, we're going to check things out. We want to know what you knew. Now, officially speaking, if we're talking about what is in the public record right now, all we have is the NCAA's legal filings that say they were tipped off about Brennan Sorsby's gambling via law enforcement.
Right.
Like that's where they say they got it from. They didn't say they got it from Cincinnati. But it is a logical question if you're the NCAA, if you're the Big 12, to ask, given especially how widespread Brennan Sorsby's gambling was, what did Cincinnati know?
When did you know anything? On top of all this, Andy, because you're right, the timeline's going to be exhausted here. It involves two conference members. We're not done with this. We know that Cincinnati's been served papers, if you will, by the NCAA. That was acknowledged as well at this event. I think at least the person I saw, it was the Athletics' Chris Vanini, also quotes Scott Satterfield saying, hey, we knew from conversations with Brendan that schools were after him as the season was going on, and he mentioned Texas Tech. So let's talk about Mike's Live again for a second. This is the difference in the new world and the old world.
This is where Lane Kiffin, when he was at Tennessee, would have been called down to Birmingham to get yelled at.
Andy knows where I'm going with this. Brett Yormark is trying to tell everybody about a new energy drink patch and how different and cool they are, and is completely aghast that he's being asked critical questions about two conference members and essentially the biggest story of the offseason, which is insane considering all the stupidity going on in DC and the breathlessness by which the media has covered that, and yet this was still bigger. So he's completely sideswiped that somebody's going to ask him this question. But on top of all this, at the PR event with the Monster Girls and the corporate goodwill, and we're going to be, it was like, you know, these things are like breathing LinkedIn feeds right now. It's disgusting. This dude failed to understand that one coach, Scott Satterfield, was going to get up and say, hey, another conference member who you just talked to was tampering with our roster, with our starting quarterback last season during conference play. Mike Slive would have had somebody buried in a field, Andy.
Well, right. And the thing is, like, we all know Brennan Sorsby was being tampered with. We know every quarterback who actually wound up moving was being tampered with during the season.
But the problem is...
But when a coach says it...
Yes! We left Big 12 media. This is the point. This is PR and comms and crisis strategy 101. I am seriously... Somebody can take this and hopefully use it with Flax. We are all leaving Big 12 media days laughing about Monster Energy, which may or may not have been preventable, but we're still talking about the one thing they didn't want us to talk about. And it now involves a multitude of players all under the Big 12 brand. this was a messaging failure and a failure to anticipate by the Big
12. Well, and also that same day, and Ross, you've talked to all these people too. I thought Joey McGuire performed really well by just answering all the questions.
Yeah. Always, right? He always performs well, I feel like, behind the mic. Sorry, I had a, if the audio only listeners thought I dropped off the face of the earth, I had to peel away for a call for about 10 minutes. So I'm unfortunately missed Godfrey's rant. I have to go back and listen. Joey is always great behind the mic and always pretty just kind of out there, right? There's not a lot of hiding going on with him. And he was answered every question, seemed, you know, that came his way on the situation. And he seemed actually genuinely like happy to be there, you know, and a coach in his position, probably a lot of them wouldn't want to be there answering questions for media, but he kind of loves it. And he kind of thrives off of it.
Oh, he didn't like getting the same questions though, because we had him at the end of the day. And, you know, we get done with the video interview, which he sat for 20 minutes and we peppered him with all these questions. And he gets done and you can tell he's just like, okay, I enough of this crap. But he understands it's part of his job.
Yes. It's a CEO mentality. That's what you have to do. It's crazy to me that, like, so to take people behind the scenes, we knew Ross and Andy would be at this event. We knew that we would recap it on Thursday. And I thought for sure, y'all, it's July 9th. I just got the code to EA NCAA football. Thanks to our friends at EA and Ben, shout out. Woke up this morning. My kid was literally at 6:55 in the morning doing the stadium pulse thing in Sanford Stadium, trying to psych out Georgia Tech's kicker. This is the time of year, Andy, we start talking about real football. I wanted to come on this segment on the Thursday show and say, hey, I thought it was really interesting how Colin Klein described Avery Johnson. Right. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, hey, what a shot that Dave Aranda took at Florida, I think, with Lagway and sort of his QB mindset mentality. We're not talking about any of this. Again, we're not talking about football. We're not even talking about Deion freaking Sanders. Mm. And what, like, think about the ability for him to magnetize media attention. We're still talking about Sorsby. We're still talking about this conference's failure to manage. And this is a problem. I don't care if you're the monster Big 12. I really don't. I'm not going to say that ever on the show. I'm sorry. But like, I grew up as a kid thinking, I didn't even know that the Winston Cup was Winston cigarettes. That's how ingrained the marketing was. Like, I'm fine with that. I don't care if all your jerseys are monster green. It doesn't bother me at all. But your failure to stop or even stymie this conversation is mind-bogglingly bad for a major institution. And I know the SEC wouldn't do it. And it kills me to say that.
And now the story is going to continue, right? I don't know if when I was off, if you guys mentioned the, now we have an inquiry open.
We did.
And Satterfield saying that Texas Tech was tampering and like, I mean, it only got worse at a media event where you should have nipped it in the bud. He's not playing you anymore. He literally is not a player. Yeah, he's not an athlete.
Come out and had kind of the definitive statement on it. And it's interesting because the monster thing was their priority. They mentioned a little bit about the bill in Washington. Like, the Big 12 wants it bad. All of the league members want it bad.
That's because
they
could
have made it a PR event for that if they'd have wanted to.
That's because the real commissioner, the real commissioner of the Big 12 is paying for it. I mean, we could have, if anything, maybe if we're 4D chess here for people like Ross and Andy there who are going to hit them hard with good questions, maybe all the Sorsby stuff was a smokescreen, so they didn't have to talk about the bill in D.C. How about that?
But they like the bill. They wanted to pass. So.
I don't know. Hey, man, I'm pulling it out of the old rear end right now. This was, this was one of the dumber media events I have absorbed. Well, obviously wasn't there and happy for it. But this was a sideshow.
I'm trying to think of what would have been the story. Like, you had Julian Lewis from Colorado kind of implying that last year they weren't really –
yeah, that was a wild quote
by their assistants. Very much.
I feel like it didn't look like that was a group setting. The clip that I saw looked like it was a one-on-one.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a little bit of a failure to coach up the kid on how to say. I think he meant himself. I think he meant that he was not reading and that it was a developmental issue. Because for those of you who don't know,
he was also, they made it clear they were redshirting him. And
yeah.
So he played four games and that was it. So.
But the verbiage comes off as the entire offense was not doing that. And,
right.
and if, for those of you who don't know, Pat Shurmur, NFL veteran, is supposedly calling the plays and drawing up the offense of Colorado. I have a hard time believing that they're not doing that.
You're right. And Brendan Marion's there now. Obviously different offense. They're going to look very different. So I'll be interested to see what happens there. I'll say a couple other things I noticed. The Big 12 probably would have liked me to notice when they weren't talking about Texas Tech. Look at the dudes that TCU brought. TCU's bodies are going to look a lot like Texas Tech's bodies this year.
Oh,
I don't know if that necessarily means they're going to perform that way.
Okay.
They're going to look like that.
Do we have a, so we talked about this on Tuesday, sort of the fat Vegas buffet middle of the league. And then we have BYU and Texas Tech. Do you feel like, are you pulling TCU closer to that, that top group?
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
I would say so. And talking to other coaches, they feel like there's quite a bit of talent there.
With allegedly just $20 million. Sonny Dykes told me he has, that's his roster budget this year. It's $20 million.
I am glad you brought that up, Ross.
Interesting.
Because Sonny Dykes had an idea that he tossed out to you that you wrote about in your On3 column on Thursday.
And it's real dumb.
it's stupid. A good conversation. And
it's a fun conversation. Yes.
It is. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, should payroll be considered in college football playoff selection? We'll be right back. We are back, College Football Inquirer. Ross and I back from Big 12 Media Days, and Ross had a column inspired by Sonny Dykes, who is one of the most
engaging.
Dave
Aranda.
Oh, and Dave Aranda too. Yes, yes. Two of the more engaging interviews you will ever find, for different reasons. Sonny Dykes, kind of your classic quintessential football coach. He's a
very different people. Yeah.
And Dave Aranda.
Nerd.
Coming at it from a completely different direction than anybody else.
I like him. I like Dave a lot, but he's a nerd. Yeah. I mean, he'd probably tell you that. Yeah.
Ross, I want you to describe the idea here.
Yeah.
And then I want Godfrey to just go.
Yeah.
I'll get a time.
So back in May, they had Big 12 spring meetings where all the coaches and the ADs get together and they talk business and legislation, and presidents are there too, school presidents as well. And at that meeting, one of the days, Rich Clark, the CFP executive director, did his presentation on the CFP and how they select teams and the new metrics and data points they're using. After that presentation, off to the side, some coaches, I believe, gathered together with some CFP folks and asked another question, which was, hey, why don't you guys consider how much a team spends on its roster when evaluating teams? Because a team that spent $15 million and is 9-3 shouldn't be considered the same as a team that spent $30 million and is 9-3. And so that kind of, there's a little banter and discussion there. Sonny Dykes was involved in that. Dave Aranda, though. Dave is the one that talked about it probably the most with me. And obviously, it's never, ever going to happen. Right. That's never going to happen. But it is kind of a fun topic, and it certainly made me chuckle as they were discussing this issue. I think Dave said something like, you know, they have all these metrics, strength of schedule and margin of victory, but we're spending $15 million and so and so spending $35 million.
Degree of difficulty.
And so to me, though, more than anything, it is a window into how these coaches, especially in the Big 12, feel, because particularly this league has one team up here spending up here and everybody else spending down here pretty much. There might be one other team in between, maybe. I feel like there
are other programs that could spend that way, but like I talked to Kalani Sitake at BYU. He doesn't think they're going to do it like that in football. That they're not going to spend the way Texas Tech spends, even though we know that the reason Kalani Sitake, or one reason that Kalani Sitake stayed at BYU and didn't go to Penn State is
major reason. Yeah.
Told that they're going to get more. But But will BYU football spin the way that BYU basketball spins? Because they had AJ DeBonsa, who wound up being the number one pick in the NBA draft, who probably had the largest NIL deal in college basketball last year. They probably aren't doing that in football, it doesn't sound like. So it is interesting. Godfrey, I just need to know what you think about this.
Roswin,
fire when ready.
Ross, when this stuff is happening and you're just there, like you got the tape recorder, are you ever, this is more for the video audience here, are you ever just trying to kind of tell them with right here in the eyes? Are you ever just like, are you just being a good journalist and you're just like,
cool.
Yeah, let's see where this goes. What possible logical fallacy? That's fine. This is amazing to me because let's hack it real fast. Let's take them at their word, and let's say that there should be some sort of inverse correlation on money spent, which, by the way, none of them are turning in receipts. Let's start there. None of them are even turning in receipts. So it's impossible for the committee to even consider this because we don't have the paper. All right. Let's say we did.
I actually think this might have been a sneaky way for them to.
Yes. All right. No, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have one of the quants. Shout out to my buddy Parker, Stats of War on social media. Right. He can come up with some sort of inverse correlation. Mm-hmm. All right. A weighted algorithm.
I would love this.
All right. We have to consider value of wins against the inverse correlation of fewer dollars spent. This is what they're saying. This is, tell me if I'm wrong. Yeah,
dollars per fewer, victory. However
fewer dollars spent on a victory means that it should be a weighted metric. So the wins should matter more. So here's what I'm going to do. You ready?
Oh boy.
Yep. I am now going to be the next athletic director at, let's say, Coastal Carolina. Okay. And we are going to schedule the easiest non-conference possible. All right. We are going to spend, what do you think, Andy? What do you think? NIL 1.5 total?
Oh, Coastal's going to spend more than that.
All right. Well, no, but we're going to do this dirt rate. All right.
Okay.
We're going to win 11 games in our conference championship. All right.
Okay.
We're going to tear through, and then our 11 wins are going to be worth infinitely more than all of those Southeastern Conference and Big Ten teams winning 9 games. And we should not only vault into the playoffs,
cook the books?
Gentlemen.
Because how do you win the Sun Belt with a $1.5 million payroll?
What I'm saying, like, I'm throwing out numbers like arbitrarily, so 2 years ago, like Ohio State had 20 million. Let's say it's 1.5, right? Because it is actually like in a lot of instances in the group, it's 20%, 15% of not even the outliers, but the average sort of big dog in the power two, right? This is what I'm getting at. And so according to these brain trust geniuses, broke boys, by the way, we're sitting here talking about Baylor and TCU whining about people spending too much money.
Y'all
need to go talk to your people because this is embarrassing. Where are the McLeans right now? Where are all the donors at Baylor? They can make federal lawsuits disappear. They can make investigations into Title IX disappear. Y'all start stroking some checks, man. This is some broke boy. I'm going to be honest with you. You're all a bunch of secret, like hardcore conservatives, meritocracy, Ayn Rand. This kind of sounds like diversity and equity inclusion. This kind of sounds like affirmative action for broke boys. Ours, we should matter more, and we should be allowed because we only paid 35% or 40% of what Texas Tech did.
Well, let me tell you where that should matter.
Work on your stack.
Not in the college football playoff selection, because that is, you win or did you not win? Who did you beat? Who did you not beat?
Yes. Yeah. If you would have overspend, hey man, last time I checked, this was America. Okay, if you want to overspin in a wanton and completely ill-advised way that destroys yourself, your community, and your others, that's what this country was founded on, okay? And if Texas A&M wants to blow $70 million on Jimbo, or Texas Tech wants to overspend on a position group, or any school in the Southeastern Conference wants to get silly with their roster, not only should they, they're gonna, guys. We have established that for 70 years, everybody was cheating anyway. My favorite part of this, Andy, is that if we did establish this, like you had to turn in your receipts, and you're like, oh, you guys spent a lot, so your wins mean less. They're all going to cheat again.
Yeah,
okay. Of course. Then they lie on their receipts. I do think this is, every coach is just trying to come up with a way for somebody to turn in the receipts.
I think it's whining. It's whining.
Yeah, they all want that. But here's where it actually should matter.
Okay.
And where you should seek out the numbers, the real numbers, and then weigh them against the wins and the losses and against the payrolls of the other teams. If you're an athletic director, trying to do a few things, trying to decide if you're going to fire your coach.
Yeah.
If you fire your coach,
yeah,
which coach are you going to hire? Let me throw a name at you two. Brent Brennan. Brent Brennan won 9 games at Arizona last year. Arizona was probably in the bottom 4 of payroll in the Big 12.
Yeah.
That Houston, is a good coaching job. Right Houston, there.
Same thing.
Yeah, right? Willie Fritz. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I think Houston's payroll was the lowest in power conference football, I believe.
Right. Yeah, Fertitta has not been the faucet that people thought he would be in NIL because there's an ideological division there. Well,
the Big 12 is interesting. Mm. The Big 12 is interesting because the Big 12 is not the most powerful football conference, but it is the most powerful conference top to bottom in another sport.
Yep.
And the push-pull at various Big 12 schools between football and basketball is fascinating because...
Yeah. Yeah.
There are some very high-priced basketball rosters in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And the football coaches, they will never, like, even off the record, most of the football coaches will not say, I wish they wouldn't spend much on basketball. Or I wish they wouldn't.
But I know
it's there. It is an issue.
I think it's this. I think this is the best way to look at it. There are levels of wealth. And we all know wealthy people. We talk to wealthy people. There's a big gap between I own a second home and I own a plane. And when you're spending a lot on football, you own a plane. You might own planes. Right. Okay. That's a little different than like, hey, the local car dealership's done well and I've got a lake
house. The
problem
is the pay scale has changed so dramatically that what you've got to pay for a good basketball team now is what you paid for a whole good football team 2 years ago.
Mm. And that's where
out of whack.
Yeah. I do think there's an ideological thing of, I still do think there are basketball schools. And I do think that it's easier to rally around check writers at Kansas for Bill Self.
Sure.
Yeah. I think at Houston specifically, you take a guy like Tillman Fertitta, who I've known for a long time. It won't shock anybody to know that Tillman really likes the idea of stroking a big check if the building has his name on it, which most wealthy people do.
Which the basketball arena does. And Kelvin Sampson takes them to the national championship game. Like
he's also awesome. And he's also in the basketball business, too, because he owns the Houston Rockets. There, right. I do think there is a wait-and-see apprehension amongst the truly wealthy at a lot of these schools that are not Texas Tech about dumping X, like 10X, 5X, whatever the number is, into football and not getting the return on it. And so, Ross, you mentioned Houston. I think Houston's interesting because I think there's a little bit of a gentleman's agreement there. Willie Fritz is the king of over-delivering. Mm-hmm. All right, relative to the mean, relative to the average, the player value, whatever stat you want to talk about. If he continues to do that, I do believe that Houston will elevate. Now, are they ever going to be Lubbock? Feels unlikely, but I do think that if you can find the right coaching staff, then you can have these situations, especially in the Big 12. Like, Andy, let's go back to Arizona for a second, right? Maybe one of the most overlooked performances by a program coaching players, everything in 2025, right? That's a good example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And why did, Arizona, again, I think is potentially going to be pretty good this year.
Yeah.
Why is this happening? How can they be good when there are so many other schools paying more money? Well, sometimes it takes one person that sort of tips the balance. And in Arizona's case, it's Noah Fifita. Noah Fifita stayed at Arizona after Jed Fish went to Washington. He stayed because T-Mac stayed, the receiver, Tedrone McMillan, who was his high school teammate. And then, T-Mac's in the NFL now. He's the Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. The Fifita then becomes the bell cow guy, the reason everybody else stays at Arizona. People tried to get him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he stayed. And then people now are willing to stay probably at a little bit lower price because they know they got the QB and they know they can win games.
So let's go back to what Ross was absorbing with a straight poker face in Dallas. Just a... sorry, not Dallas, Plano. Someone like Dave Aranda is squarely on the hot seat for years of product or lack thereof in Waco. Andy, you mentioned this as a sort of marker against the value of a coach. This works in the reverse as well, or the inverse, which is that Wisconsin basically did an evaluation last year and said, we don't think it's Luke Fickell. We think it's an institutional problem. Yeah. We think it's us. It's an institutional problem. But if we turn this faucet on and we don't see a corollary to that, we are then going to we are going to determine it is Luke Fickell. If you are hiring,
what happened
right
to James Franklin? Wait, James Franklin at Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that losing to Northwestern. Well,
James Franklin was not wrong that he was not getting the resources commensurate with what was expected of him.
Yeah.
And then he did. For a long time.
And then he did.
He got him.
And he lost to UCLA.
He lost to UCLA Northwestern.
He lost to a 12-year-old calling plays on offense. He's not 12. Baby face. The problem.
Jerry Neuheisel's in his 30s.
I know, but look, I think that's a compliment. The Neuheisel family, you've got a very fair complexion. They look younger. Look, okay? All right? Southern California white don't crack. I believe that is the same. So look, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Out. Dave Aranda, again, not the best case study because he's hot seated this year. These coaches should want to turn in these receipts because if you can show wins above an expected amount of payroll, then you would be considered an exceptional coaching candidate at the next job. Hey, this isn't that dissimilar from how managers in baseball are evaluated on those low payroll teams, guys who are snatched up. So
I actually think this makes evaluating coaches significantly easier than it was before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. That's a good point. I can't remember which coach it was that came came into the room and I talked to all of them and I can't remember which one, but maybe it's a good thing I didn't remember because I don't think it was on the record. But he said
You need to remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I did this job for a little while. You should remember that part.
His team payroll was 10th.
Yeah.
And they finished maybe in the top 6 or 5 in the league. Mm-hmm. And so he went to his athletic director and said, like, hey, like this should be viewed as a good year. Like we should start thinking about it like that, which was fascinating to me. And I've got to go back to my transcription because it is worth like me writing that about that because I thought that was really interesting.
Ross, no, it's 100% true. That's exactly Andy, how you should look at it as an AD. If you had the number 12 payroll in the league and your team finished 3rd in the league, you got a hell of a coach. He did a hell of a job that year.
Take it a step further, Andy. If you're the athletic director, then I think it's incumbent upon you to then turn around and go to the donor base and say, we over-delivered.
Yep. Now let's try to get him to 6th in the league in payroll and see if we can
what
win
happens.
The thing.
Yeah. And by the way, and if our payroll doesn't advance, this isn't going to sustain because all of these incidents that we're talking about, including Arizona, because they have an exceptional quarterback who's not going to be there forever, these are outliers. It's not manageable.
The other piece of it is if you are 3rd in the league in payroll and 10th in the league in standings, you should be on the hot seat
quickly. Yeah. Eventually we're going to acclimate.
You do that 2 years in a row, you should be fired.
I think we're rounding the corner. I think I said this on the show last year. There's no such thing as a year 1 or year 0 anymore. Like you are expected to come in immediately. We can probably apply this to some coaches right now or going into situations, maybe even in the Big 12. Like we talked about on Tuesday, the situation at Utah, that's a little bit different because there's some compounding. There's a lot of context.
Morgan Scalley is in an odd situation. Yeah. That one's an unusual one. But
if you look at the first and second year coaches in the Big 12 specifically, it is very hard to argue against fans who are saying, well, then why should I be patient? Why should I be patient? You can flip your roster right away. That's been an emerging narrative.
This is also another example of why you should let the numbers breathe, let them out. And I talked to ADs about this. I talked to coaches about this week. And there was an AD who said, hey, we keep going to our legislatures to have them pass laws to shield these numbers. And I'm like, why don't you just go to the legislature and make them pass a law that requires you to release them?
It would also make it easier.
And then you have cover because you can be like, well, they told us we had to. Because they all want the numbers out there now.
Well, it would drive down the price. That's the first thing, right? Because the market, because
it would help them evaluate their coaches.
Yes, it would be a transparent market. Also, Andy, it would help you fire your coach. Mm. It'd be an easy way for the check writers to also handle that problem as
well. There's two steps. It'd help you fire your coach and help you pick the next one.
So someone very important in college football asked me why I was high on Kenny Dillingham after the Big 12 championship run season before last. And then going tooth and nail with Texas, acquitting themselves very well. And one of the reasons I say was like, I think Kenny understands the emerging market and the culture that accompanies it. And he's going to be very transparent about what the game is and what these kids need. And I don't know if you remember this. There was like one of his players had car trouble, literally. Like one of his good players had car trouble. I can't remember. I think it was a defensive player. And he immediately goes on social media. He's like, guys, what can we do about this? Meaning like, hey, in the Arizona State community, this kid's getting around on like a, you know, busted Taurus. That was me when I was 16. What can we do about this? And then eventually the kid got a car through an NIL deal. And those were the things I liked. Now, what I couldn't really finish in my evaluation to this person was, how much did Arizona State class, or roster, I should say, cost the year that they won the Big 12? I don't know.
Not much.
Not much, right?
I have an idea.
Okay, what we got?
I believe it was less than $5 million.
Boy, I tell you what, you know who's really interested in that fact right now? A little university down in Tallahassee with some cash flow issues and some maybe not the best credit report. Imagine Kenny Dillingham coming in and not constantly. You've got coaches and leadership at a place like Florida State.
Kenny Dillingham won't bitch about it. Kenny Dillingham is the one who's going to say, and so I shameless plug.
Go for it.
He's going to be on my On Three show at some point in the next few days.
Okay.
And you will hear him explain how you effectively ask someone to write a $10 million check and then they do it.
Yeah. That guy, well, if he has that ability, if that's in the skill tree, if you will, shout out to the video game. If that's in your skill tree, I don't really care what your success rate on third down is, because you can hire some nerd to do that. If you can conjure checks.
That's how he grew up.
but imagine a human being that can do both. Then to me, when we roll into carousel season, boys, and anybody says, hey, who should X hire? I'm going to be like, hire Kenny Dillingham, dude. If he can pull money and he's a good offensive play caller and he can recruit and young 18-year-olds like him, the hell else do you need?
Yep.
It's true.
Who's his agent? That's Clint, right? Hey, Clint.
Is Clint
single digit, like 1.5 on the, just 1.5.
I will say.
I want a jet ski. That's it.
They're like, not all
not
different.
Not a lake house.
Not every, all coaches have similarities. I do think Kenny's somewhat different in this vein.
Yeah.
Because Kenny could have already left. Kenny's from Scottsdale.
Yes.
Family's nearby. It does actually seem to matter to him. So you're going to have to blast him out of there.
I think it's a Matt Campbell situation, even though they're very different people. But what I mean by that is I think that Matt Campbell always had, what did I say, 1.5, 2.5 jobs in mind that he would leave Iowa State for. I think it's a similar situation with Kenny. Otherwise, he's going to be happy and consistent with Arizona State, much like Matt Campbell was at a resource deficient place like Iowa State.
Yeah. And Arizona State could become resource sufficient. And I think that's Kenny's plan for it, is make it where it is one of the higher resourced programs in the conference.
Right.
And
bars and nightclubs operate in cash. I don't know what the problem is. I've been there. I've been to Arizona State. I know what goes on like a Tuesday night.
It's a lot more corporate on Mills.
Y'all got a lot of cash these days. Y'all got a lot of young alumni in crypto investment. Like y'all can get some scratch together. All right, it's Arizona State here. Come on.
It's not just Chuck Box burgers for everyone anymore.
Just saying. It's a diversified alumni base. Okay. You can come up with cash quickly without questions being asked.
So I think what we've all basically said is if we had a college football coach fantasy draft, Kenny Dillingham would probably be pretty high on our big boards. Let us talk about something new coming to Yahoo. Next up, we're going to talk college football fantasy, because you are going to get to play college football fantasy at yahoo.com this season. It's coming very soon. We're going to explain exactly how it works and exactly who you need to be drafting, maybe who you should avoid. We'll be right back. We are joined now by our pal Eric Froton from Yahoo, who is very on brand today in his college fantasy football t-shirt, because it's a big day. Yahoo is announcing the return of fantasy college football. And Eric, I know this is a big day for you. This is going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait to play this. And we got to explain how it works. And then we got to get into to some of the guys that we need to be drafting. So, Eric, can you take us through what this is going to look like? Because this is coming out very soon at Yahoo. And how's it going to play? If you want to play college football, fantasy football, how's that going to work, you know, compared to what you're already doing in the NFL?
Sure. Well, the sign-up process will be very similar to what we're all used to here at Yahoo, where you'll have the opportunity to join a league. Now, the current problem with the college fantasy football landscape is we don't have any providers that are able to let you join a league that you aren't starting yourself. So the point is you would have to, before the Yahoo immersion into this space, you had to get 11 other friends, start the league yourself, create the league, and then go through it. Here, you can just go to Yahoo, just like you've done it with NFL, sign up, get in the league, and as soon as it's filled, you'll have a draft date and be able to rock and roll. So very easy in terms of the process of joining the league.
That is awesome. Because that has been the issue with, and I know you've been doing college football fantasy for, 25 years now? And it has lagged behind for I think we're not speaking out of school here. It has really lagged behind what's been available to NBA fans, NFL fans. And I think this is going to be so much easier, so much more fun. And I was going through some of the stuff that they're going to be doing. And I want you to explain how the lineups are going to work, because there's an option in there, in the standard options. Everybody who's played fantasy football knows what it's like when you pick a defense. You pick various offensive skill players and then you pick a whole defense. But now in Yahoo's version of it, you can pick an entire offense.
That's correct. Yeah. And it's our proprietary trying different things sort of a situation. So you can have Jeremiah Smith essentially twice production-wise. But keep in mind, the scoring for the offense is more similar to what you'd expect from defenses. So a touchdown is only 3 points. The first 300 yards of offense is a point and a half. Every 50 additional yards is a quarter of a point. But then there's also demerits. You know, every turnover is minus 2 points. If your team loses the game as an offense, doesn't matter how bad the defense is, if you are losing, you get a minus point for that. Conversely, if you win a game, you get a point. So what I've done when I charted everything and went through the numbers from last year is the very efficient, dominant offenses in power conferences, typically the upper echelon Big Ten, the highest scores, Indiana, number one last year. Notre Dame was number three. Texas Tech was number two. You even saw Vanderbilt crawl into the top five, which I think most people wouldn't have expected. That was the Pavia effect, of course. And then when you look at this year, the sort of easy schedules, Indiana's got a breeze. They're in great shape with that. Notre Dame might have the best blue blood schedule in the entire country. They're certainly another team you're going to want to
Can I throw another one out there at you?
Oh, absolutely.
Penn State.
Sneaky schedule. Everyone thinks because Matt Campbell's coming over and the entire roster's turning over, they left to go to Virginia Tech with Tony Franklin, didn't have a big recruiting class. Matt Campbell's coming in. Keep in mind with Rocco Becht, fun fact with Rocco Becht, the most plus graded throws in the entire country last season, Rocco Becht. I didn't expect to see that when I was doing my college fantasy research, but there it is.
And I'm assuming Ben Bramer is up there in your tight end rankings as well. He went from the Cyclones to the Nittany Lions and was a popular red zone target last year for Rocco Becht.
Absolutely, of course. And then when you you factor in the fact they're going to Penn State, it just seems like they seem to just churn out tight ends no matter what they're doing. They're NFL caliber up and down that roster. And it'll be certainly no exception with Ben Bramer. I currently have him as the tight end 7. He's in my tier 2 of tight ends behind the big 3, which is, of course, Trey Des Green, Jamari Johnson, and Terrence Carter.
Very nice. Okay, so this is where I wanted to get into. I'm glad we're starting this because we need to explain this. Like, obviously, Jeremiah Smith is going to go at the top of your draft.
Yes.
But, it's not going to be as obvious. And we're talking about the entirety of the power conferences in Notre Dame. They're going to be guys that I think even if you're a hardcore fan, you may not know quite yet. So give us a, let's go with some running backs right now, because you've got new faces in new places. You have guys like Aeneas Williams at Notre Dame, who is going to, you know, be replacing, well, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, who were first round draft picks. So who are some of the backs that, if you're playing fantasy, you need to know about right now?
Sure. And like you said, if we're going sort of down the board a little bit and we're not going to go with the top couple tiers, I think you should be keeping an eye on Adam Muhammad for the California Golden Bears. Washington had a couple of 100-yard games to end the season when Jonah Coleman was banged up. He had that knee injury, which for some reason Jed Fish was still playing him, even though he's wrapped up like the mummy. But the good news is Adam Muhammad, it allowed him to get in there at, you know, 225 pounds, just a bruising style of running back. He goes over there to Cal, which brings in Tosh Lupoi, DC of Oregon. He ran for 100 yards against Tosh's defense at the end of the year. Trust me, he noticed it. And, you know, when he was at Washington, now transferring to Cal. Cal also rode Kendrick Raphael last year hard, put him away wet. He is now at SMU. He had 240 carries. Here comes a big load for Adam Muhammad, and he has the size and stature to be able to do it and carry it.
Kendrick Raphael, one of my favorite stories, scored the touchdown at the end of the game to beat SMU. And now plays for SMU.
Yes.
And the last game of the regular season beats SMU, and now he plays for SMU. So,
oh, it's the beauty of the transfer portal, isn't it, Andy? Right?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there's so many new faces and new places now. Yeah, and so what will the top of the running back board be? I'm assuming Kiwon Lacy is probably one of those that's way up there. But who are some of the others that would be up there?
Certainly, yeah, absolutely. Kiwon Lacy is the nominal number one running back. You could have said Ahmad Hardy. It was pretty much interchangeable between the two, but then unfortunately suffered that gunshot. And there's a little bit of conjecture regarding what, you know, his availability will be. I think he will be back. That's what I'm hearing. But in what capacity, and whether or not you even see him in the non-conference slate for Missouri, why even bother, you know, jeopardizing him? So that does cloud his profile. If there's a number two, it's Caleb Hawkins for Oklahoma State, transferring up like everybody else from North Texas, following Eric Morris to Oklahoma State from North Texas. He was incredible last year. You know, came in like the RB3 on the depth chart, just absolutely took over that room and was dazzling at that lower level. Can't wait to see what he can do over there at Oklahoma State. Absolutely.
All right, let's talk QBs, because there are a lot of really good returning QBs, but it's a question of, in fantasy, who's going to score the most? Because, like, I'll give you an example. I definitely trust CJ Carr if I am building a team trying to win the national championship. But Notre Dame's also going to have a really good defense. They're not going to have to put up massive numbers of points, and you know, but I do think they'll probably throw a little more than they did last year when they had those two first round running backs. So like, I'm trying to figure out, I'm not necessarily trying to win a national title, but I'm trying to win my fantasy league. Who are the QBs who are going to put up big numbers?
Sure. And remember, you know, this, as you astutely noted, this is not real life. This is not how we're trying to win a national championship. It's how we're trying to win a fantasy championship. And the path through fantasy greatness is on the ground with quarterbacks. You know, in the air raid era, Andy, before, you know, when they were stopping the clock at every first down, when you were every out of bounds, it seemed like you were stopping, and Bailey Zappe is throwing for 6,000 yards. We're never seeing that again. That era has passed.
It's dead.
You can't do it anymore. Just that the clock is running, and you don't have the ability to accrue the yardage through the air that you used to. So the dual threat profile is what's going to be the most valuable in this format. And a large reasoning is because 4-point passing touchdowns is the default setting. Very important that you make sure that you understand that. Now, you can always customize it. If you want to start a league and you want to have 6-point passing touchdowns, you can do that. And that is, you know, kind of, you know, the standard when it comes to the pro style QBs. That's what you want. If you don't have the 6-point passing touchdowns, then you have to look at guys who can run. Arch Manning, he is simply the most complete quarterback for this sort of profile. Keep in mind, he's 230 pounds. He was a bull when he decided to pull it down and scramble and do those designed runs. And you're going to see him score probably 8 or 9 touchdowns on the ground. I would think, you know, he's certainly in play for that. 500 yards. My general benchmark is I try to avoid the solo threat quarterbacks is what I consider them, which are the John Reese Plumleys of the world that cannot throw a forward pass. Basically, are rugby players, you know, with a quarterback sort of position. You know what I mean? So you want to have somebody who can run for 500 yards, maybe 5 touchdowns is like, you know, 404, 505. But the passing acumen, the ability to effectively distribute the ball and do both, is really more important in this game. So you don't have anybody breathing down their neck, because if you can't throw, somebody can, and they're going to be coming up behind you.
Well, and speaking of coming up, so that what you just said, there's a guy whose numbers last year would make him the perfect QB, but he is moving up a level. And so we don't know if he's going to be able to put up those kinds of numbers. So I'm curious what you think of Byron Brown going from USF to Auburn. 14 rushing TDs last year, I believe 28 passing TDs. And the guy put up great numbers, air and land, but can he do it at Auburn versus doing it at USF?
Oh, I think that is one of the great questions of the top of the quarterback board. And a lot of that comes down to, I was at the Elite 11 finals in Huntington Beach last month, and he was one of the counselors. So I got to see him go through the full pro day progression, those 20 throws, and had a pretty good evaluation of him. And it kind of jived with what I had seen on tape, which is simply, he is a incredible athlete. And that is something that, I mean, is going to play no matter where he's at. But here we are. We're in the SEC now. This is not the AAC. And if you watch Byron Brown, his best games were against the lower rungs of competition. You didn't see him dominate against, you know, the Miamis of the world and the Power Four teams. I'm concerned about how he translates for largely the reason I talked about. He feels like a solo threat QB to me. He's got a hitch in his throwing motion, did not look particularly accurate when he was out there doing the pro day stuff. And then he was able to kind of take advantage. Koger looks great. Jeremiah Koger, you got Keyshawn Singleton. Both of them are also following him to Auburn. But I don't know if he can effectively distribute and deal with the athleticism of an SEC caliber defense when you have a first-year coach, a sort of, you know, putting the roster back together, rejiggering it, and him feeling like he's a placeholder so that Golish has a decent season year one while he's getting his roster, you know, configured to his liking, and then he has someone else come in when everything's set up next year and thrives. I am not prioritizing Byron Brown despite his running ability because of the lack of that effective distribution on the passing side.
Well, and so that's a going up. We talked about Drew Mestemaker going up from North Texas to Oklahoma State. How about going down? I was at Big 12 Media Days, talked to DJ Lagway the other day. And DJ Lagway obviously had a disastrous season at Florida last year. But he's going to Baylor. He is a 240-pound guy. He definitely has a good arm. He definitely can run. But to me, the question is, are you going to be throwing 4 interceptions in a game again like you did? Or I think it was 5. It may have been 5 against LSU. But are you going to be putting the ball into danger? Or is it possible we see, you know, some of those flashes we saw his freshman year, except against probably not as good a competition?
Yeah, it's certainly up for debate at this point. And that's one of the beauties of college football. I know you love it, and I love it as well, because there's so much projection and there's so much year to year that changes, you know. And going from the Billy Napier-led Florida team, which really was in disarray outside of Jaden Baugh, I think it's pretty fair to say on the offensive side, just never got clicking. And now to be down there at Baylor, where, keep in mind, right, last year, Sawyer Robertson, quarterback of Baylor, he threw more pass attempts than anybody in the country last year, 548. And it's not like they were out there playing, you know, extensive games in the postseason, but his on target rate was only 51%. You know, that was in well in the lower half of of Power Four quarterbacks. There's opportunity, and Sawyer Robertson threw for 3,700 yards. So if you look at that and you project the style of offense they have in Baylor, the Big 12, where they naturally kind of play a little quicker anyways because they have to keep pace with some of the potent offenses that you're going to see in that conference, and it's a little more wide open, I think that there's real opportunity for DJ Lagwe to make a leap. You see it year after year with, it's a baseball term that I will apply to college football, the post-hype sleepers. And it's always happens with the quarterbacks. Look at Dante Moore. He might be the quintessential example of that, where he flamed out at UCLA, was a first-year starter, goes and does the apprentice role at Oregon, which is now what Rayola's doing. And then he comes in last year, looks polished, perfectly formed, and now he's the number one, you know, in the preseason, the number one projected NFL quarterback for the 2027 draft. So I don't like the idea of giving up on these highly touted quarterbacks early, and you can really find value down the board with a guy like DJ Lagwe in a pass-heavy system.
Yeah, and it's the down-the-board picks that are going to win you or lose you your league. Because, like, what if you grab Anthony Calandria, the new Nebraska starting quarterback? What if you grab him late and he just blows up? Like, what if he's just better than Dylan Raiola was at Nebraska? We don't know any of this yet. We do not know. We saw him play at Virginia. We saw Calandria play at UNLV. But we just don't know when you get around all these new players and in a new system. So that's the thing that I think is the most fun part of this. And I will be definitely jumping in a league. I will definitely, I think me and some of the guys at On3 are already planning on making a league, and we may have to make a College Football Inquirer league and you know, see if I can just dominate Ross and Godfrey too.
Oh, I'm here for that. If you need somebody to shepherd you through, consider it done, especially with Godfrey. Big fan of all three of you guys, and just thrilled to be a part of Yahoo Sports and get to chop it up with you guys every once in a while.
I would love that. Eric, thank you so much, and I cannot wait. So yeah, get your draft boards ready, because come next month, we will all be drafting our own college football fantasy teams.
Sounds good. Thanks, Andy. Play college fantasy football on Yahoo.
Big thank you to Eric for coming by and explaining the new Yahoo Sports college fantasy football. We're all going to be playing it very soon. I cannot wait. So come find me. Come challenge me. I will draft a great team. I'm telling you right now, I will draft a great team. Godfrey, Ross, and I will be back on Tuesday. ACC Media Days next week. So we'll get you ready for that. That's a league that's been through some stuff. And now they got a team at the top that still hasn't won the league, but may compete for the national title. We'll talk a little ACC next week on the College Football Inquirer. We'll talk to you then.